Steve Smith made runs. Jofra Archer took wickets. Sound familiar? It was a gorgeous day at the Oval, sun shining all over, and it was near perfect for England. No, they didn't get to 300 in the morning, but that didn't really matter in the end. Archer was brilliant, taking 6 for 62 as Australia were bowled out for 225. Smith, forever relentless, passed 50 once again, as he has done all series. Although he did eventually fall for 80, his lowest score of the series. Rory Burns and Joe Denley survived just to get England to 9 for none at the end of the day. England hold the lead of 78. Welcome to the Wisden Ashes Daily Podcast. I'm your host, Tahir Hashim, joined by Wisden Cricket Monthly's editor-in-chief, Phil Walker. Phil, let's first talk about the main men. Archer didn't look his best at Old Trafford, but he was great today.
Yeah, the less said about Old Trafford, the better, because that was peculiar, wasn't it, when Australia were 20 for 2 on that first morning under leaden skies and he couldn't crank it up. But then we do have this awful tendency to throw far too much too soon at these great young talents in all sports. It's a disease of English sporting culture. So we'll park that and we'll instead consider what he's done in London this summer. Five wickets at Lord's and six today, 6 for 60-odd on a pitch that everybody thought was pretty flat. The general consensus, understandably, after day one was that England had left a lot out there to end up 270 for eight. And what was it, 294 this all out this morning? Most people thought that's 50 to 100 shy. Well, Jofra just laid waste to that kind of conventional thought again. And in fairness, you know, the ball did move for England. It wasn't just Jofra today, it was also Sam Curran. And if anybody had really kicked the door down today in that middle order where Australia have been fallible all summer, then it was really Sam Curran. I don't think you can really separate the two. Curran took 3 for, Archer took 6 for, but they both had an equal effect today.
And with Curran, he sometimes looks quite innocuous with that left arm in
don't
swing.
Don't fall into this trap, Tahir.
No, I will say that the fact that he always continuously pitches it up, he's always going to invite errors. And
I think that's a very good point, though, that you make, because he was driven by Labuschagne early in the piece, in his second over maybe, and it was a long half volley. Now, I've been in good form this year, but I thought I'd have just creamed that through the covers. And it's 78 to 80 mile an hour often, and especially when he does really pitch it up like that. But then 3 or 4 balls later, very similar delivery to Labuschagne, and he skews it to third slip, and it's just short, or just wide of third slip, ran away for 4. So you push the line all the time if you're Sam Curran. He's not a bowler who's going to bowl dry. He's not a bowler who's going to bowl a boring length. He's not that kind of cricketer. You saw him with the bat when he came out on day one and slapped his third ball for 6 over with 2 men back for the hook. He's a thriller of a cricketer. And so he's going to go the distance from time to time because he's always trying to move the game along. Gareth Batty said to me 2 years ago, he always has a say. In every single cricket game he plays, he always has his say. The only game one can think of where he hasn't, in England colours, was the game that he played in the West Indies, where conditions were completely antithetical to what kind of qualities he offers. That's the only time when he's played for England where it's been a non-event. He always, always has a say in the outcome of a game of cricket. And we've seen it today. You described him in your piece as mysteriously brilliant a week or two ago, with the ongoing question that many are asking, what is Sam Curran? What is he? Well, I think we need to park that question and just appreciate what we've got here. As you rightly wrote in your piece, he should bat 7. He should be an impact player at 7 and a fifth bowler. And then you're talking about a real game changer of a cricketer, because he gets things going without a doubt in all conditions bar Barbados or Antigua, wherever Antigua I think it was. In England, where it always does a little bit, he's always going to have a chance. And it was interesting to see him today. All right, Wokes got Smith in the end when he missed a straight one. I mean, chalk that one up. He missed a straight one on 80. But it was Curran who inconvenienced him throughout the day. And that speaks for itself.
Cheeky plug for my piece there. Thanks very much, Phil.
No problem. It was good.
And
You've got potential. He's got to hang in there, mate.
And I mean, if anyone was going to get a hat-trick, I just had the feeling because of Corin and the way he... When you watch him, you deal with the intangibles. He is... Something happens. So you felt he was going to get that hat-trick today. Alas, it didn't come.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. He does have that kind of stardust. You've seen the way that he bats. He made a 60-odd in Sri Lanka when England were in trouble. I think it was at Palakkelly, second test match. He hit six sixes in his 60. He became the first man in history to bring up his first three 50s in test cricket with a six. First man ever to do it. He was man of the series in his first full series against India last summer. It does beg the question, where has he been? Where has he been this summer? And we're being wise after the event up to a point, but we've seen that the ball has deviated in the air and from time to time off the pitch throughout the summer. If sometimes punters and pundits are guilty of underestimating him, then maybe Joe Root and Trevor Bayliss have as well.
Even Trouble Smith, believe it or not, Smith did offer a chance at first slip to Joe Root and put him down. Smith did what Smith does.
What's happened here, Smith gets 35 to 40% of Australia's runs every time he bats, but he only got 80, so they only got 220-odd. Smith normally gets 150 at least, and which means that they get, 350 at least. But because Smith bummed out for 80-odd, suddenly Australia, out of nowhere really, are behind the eight ball. England are, what do you say, 78 ahead, I think?
Yes,
they survived a dirty, naughty session this evening where Cummins was far too fast again. It's a different experience watching it live, and I don't want to kind of sound smug to our listeners here any more than normal, but when you are sort of pitch side and you see the quicks, the real quicks, go at these batsmen with a new pill, it is truly terrifying. And sitting behind the batsman with Cummins running down from the pavilion end towards the Vauxhall end where we're sat in the press box, it was chilling and thrilling and terrifying all at once. Denley should have gone, steered one straight to gully. I think it was Marcus Harris, I think, in there at the sort of second gully. Easy catch, really. Grassed that one. Burns' last ball of the day overturned. He's very good at overturning LBW decisions, by the way, Burns. He's very cool at that. Didn't even consult for a second, overturned that decision that went initially against him but then came round. It was England's day from very inauspicious beginnings. And they will be mildly surprised to be ahead of the game. Tomorrow looms large. I mean, the sun will be out. They've got 10 second innings wickets in hand, and they've got a lead of 70, which they never in a million years would have expected at the start of the day.
In those last few overs, I mean, you talk about the feeling in the crowd watching those quicks. You also get a feeling about how things are going to pan sometimes. Just the way the Australian innings ended with Archer rampant, and then following that... For all of Joe Denley's troubles, and while Rory Burns has been excellent, you know Pat Cummins is going to seriously test you with those,
sure,
with those few overs. There was a sense that they weren't going to get out. Do you know what I mean?
I absolutely know what you mean.
And
it's the rhythms and momentum, mini momentums within a game of cricket. It also, this game has clarified just how fallible these two teams are, I think. Australia would have been desperate to have turned up here and put on a show. They dropped the England captain three times in about half an hour on the first morning. They made a peculiar decision at the toss. They didn't bowl badly yesterday, but they weren't inspired at all. They batted indifferently today. Even Smith didn't bat especially well, considering what kind of plane he's working on. And then they dropped a catch in the last 20 minutes of the day as well. It shows just how vulnerable these two teams are.
Yeah.
And when Australia were looking to make a big statement, they've come up a little bit short in this game. Just as when England, after the Stokes miracle of Headingley, were looking to make a statement at Old Trafford, they stunk the place out. It sums up both of these teams. It's little wonder that they are, let's be honest, they are middling test match teams in the world.
And I know it was England's day, but the day did sort of bottle up the series in a way. You know, you had,
yeah,
Smith make runs, Archer take wickets, but also David Warner got out cheaply, sort of the patterns of the day, kind of
It shows that because Labuschagne got runs again, but didn't get that many runs.
And also, it's worth saying, you know, a thoroughly enjoyable day's cricket. Slightly ramshackle, slightly mistake-laden, but with some moments of great class in there as well. And England, as I say, have sort of accidentally stumbled into the ascendancy here. I don't think anyone really saw that coming. Tomorrow becomes a very interesting day. I think what will happen with this game is that the next 2 days we'll see an upshot of intensity, or an upsurge rather of intensity, because it's been a peculiar atmosphere here at the Oval the first 2 days. There's been, for all the talk that the series is still alive, that it's a 2-2 scrap potentially for England to aim for, and that Australia don't want to go away having just merely retained the Ashes, they want to win the Ashes. I get that. I get all of that. But when push comes to shove, there is a lack of jeopardy in this game, and there is a lack of edginess in the crowd as a consequence. And the players, I think, first it's worth pointing out, they are out on their feet, these boys. And I'm not saying that we should get the violins out and feel sorry for them at all, but we are asking these players to perform at a ridiculously high intensive level day after day, and we are mid-September of one of the longest summers and most high octane summers, with an extraordinary drain of emotion as well as physicality over the last few months, and it builds up and it builds up, and you're asking them to go again. I think what you'll see over the next 2 days is the last knackered hurrah by these two punch-drunk teams. And while you would think England are definitely in the box seat, I can easily see Cummins just coming out tomorrow morning and just having one last day out in English conditions to confirm yet again that he is on a different level, really, to everybody else.
So we're on for a tired goodbye.
Yeah, which is maybe just me projecting. I don't know. But yeah, I don't think this game will fizzle out. I think that they will kind of gird their loins, these two teams. And I think it will be two very, very good days cricket. I can't see the game going much further into Monday and a fifth day. But you never know. We shall see. How do you see it anyway?
Oh, well, I'm down to work here on day five. So I'm hoping they they can still, you know, hold on for that. That's all I'm hoping for, really.
And do you think 2-2 would be a fair call, or do you think it would be harsh on Australia if England were to nick this last one?
I think just for the fact that it's mainly been Smith that's performed in terms of the Aussie batters, I think Labuschagne's been brilliant, but it has just been Smith. I think 2-2 is a pretty fair call.
I think that's a reasonable shout. Obviously Warner made 61, I think, in the first Test match, and has made pretty much literally nothing either side of it.
I think something like 8 single-figure scores or something like that.
Yeah, extraordinary. Marcus Harris doesn't really look like a Test match opener, certainly not against England's new ball attack. You're right. You know, 4 of the top 7 have not really delivered at all, and arguably 4.5 of the top 7 have not really delivered at all. So while Australia's pace attack and Smith are true champions, it's a peculiarly lopsided team. And so if it does end up as 2-2, then they'll be kicking themselves. But I don't think they can have an enormous amount of complaints, really. I think it would probably be just about a fair result between two very fallible, very vulnerable, but rather likeable cricket teams.
And then for both teams to reflect on the summer, you'd think that's almost... they'd be happy with that. Well, England win the World Cup, they lose the... You know, I mean, they didn't have the urn, but they... You know, 2-2 in the Ashes, that's not too bad. And for Australia, the Ashes was their aim. They got to the semi-finals of the World Cup, which was just a bit of a bonus. So it kind of works out for everyone. They might as well just shake hands now, to be honest.
You're absolutely bang on. I think both teams will quietly walk away with a 2-2, thinking, okay, no, we'll take that. We'll take that. It's been interesting because Joe Harmon and me are trying to put together the last bits of the magazine, and we're trying to work out what the right tone is for the England summer. And it's hard to pinpoint, really. Is 3-1 a tear up the rule book and start again kind of result? Is 2-2 a cautiously positive result? Or is any inability or any result where you haven't regained the Ashes on home soil, where you haven't lost here in 18 years, is any eventuality where you don't do that automatically a failure? So it's a hard thing to to absolutely nail down. And again, you can't avoid what happened on July the 8th at Lords. You can't avoid that. That casts a huge shadow over what's happened since. I mean, arguably, it might not have been the smartest move to have had an Ashes about 7 minutes after a World Cup final win, but yeah, hey-ho. I don't want to go down that boring rabbit hole of administration. I think, as you rightly say, they'll shake hands on this summer and say, okay, we've all got our piece of flesh from it.
Yeah, and like you said, rightly, they look tired. Well, you know, I'm tired too. Phil, you're tired.
I'm doing fine, thank you very much.
I mean, I'm just trying to call it a day now. Well, that's it from us, folks. Of course, we don't just talk about cricket here. We write about cricket too every day on wisden.com and every month in the shape of Wisden Cricket Monthly. If you fancy giving the magazine a go, you can get your first three copies, print or digital, for just £3.
And it is outstanding. Worth pointing that out right at this point. And the upcoming issue will be the 10 stories of the Ashes, the good, the bad and the ugly. It'll be well worth your time.
Yeah, cheers for interrupting that offer there. In fact, we'll only charge you £2.99 if you go paperless. To subscribe to the print version and get your first three copies for just £3, go to wisdomsubs.com and use the offer code, all in caps, WCM3FOR319. To subscribe to the digital version and get your first three copies for just £2.99, go to pktmags.com/WCMpod.
This advert really trips off the tongue, doesn't it? It's really, really punchy.
As ever, subscribe to the Wisden Cricket Weekly podcast, Spotify, Acast, the podcast app, all of that. Cheers, Phil.
Pleasure.